You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We're excited to have Michael Bumpus on the line with us, as we do every Friday at 1. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing terrific. Good. We're talking running backs here. You know, it's funny. We've been talking about pass rush the entirety of the offseason here, and now all of a sudden, the last couple days, we're hearing Devontae Freeman, we're hearing Carlos Hyde, and all of a sudden it's, well, you know, Rashad Penny, Chris Carson, we don't know how healthy they're going to be. All of a sudden, we got this running back issue. How urgent do you think that situation is?
I think it's as urgent as the health of that second running back, whether who's healthy. It's going to be Rashad Penny, right? And Pete Carroll says he doesn't think he's going to be ready. It's going to be tough for him to get back. And we figured out that for Chris Carson to be successful, he's got to have some help. That running back position, you take a beating, you're always getting hit. You need somebody who's going to give you a blow and somebody who's going to mix it up. So I think that was the position that didn't get neglected, because obviously they're bringing in DJ Dallas. But you have to address it. And if you can get a veteran, a guy who can fit the style that the Seahawks want to play with, I think you can go after him. But you need to pick somebody up. Who it is, I mean, there's a couple guys out there. We'll see what they choose.
Do you like either one of those guys better? Do you have a preference, Hyde or Freeman?
I like both of them. I think they're both different type of running backs. I like Carlos Hyde, obviously, because he was successful last year, rushed for 1,000 yards, and he's more of an in-between-the-tackles type dude. You know, he runs hard. Remember, he was with the 49ers for a little bit. He flashed, and he played well last year. Now, Freeman's just a different type of back. He rushed for 600 yards last year. He received for about 400. So he had over 1,000 yards total, but he's not the guy that – this is not an every down back, at least not in this the Seahawks offense. You know, your every down back is going to be a Chris Carson. So if Rashad Penny isn't healthy, I feel like Freeman can come in and do some of the things that the Hawks were going to ask Penny to do, which is, of course, you're going to run between the tackles every now and then, but get outside the tackles, run screens. And I think that's what Freeman is good at. If I were choosing, I would go with Carlos Hyde just because he's proven. But I understand why they would go with Freeman. I think Freeman is kind of like the back that they were hoping CJ Procise would turn out to be, but just didn't get there.
Michael, one of the things that we've heard about Devontae Freeman in terms of why he hasn't been signed, it seems like he's their first choice, and they've kind of gone back and forth in terms of negotiations, and Freeman has not accepted their offer. What is it about dealing with the Seahawks in this organization that might be different than others in the sense of how they go about negotiating?
Yeah, Jake, they bargain, you know, it is what it is. Freeman, I believe he wants what, $5 million. I think the Hawks offered him $2 to $3 million. And there has to be a middle ground. And I look at the $5 million mark, and I look at a guy like Mark Ingram, who got paid $5 million, and he's just not that type of back. And if you look at the history of the Seahawks, they're not just going to take the first offer. You're not going to take the first offer. They're okay with sitting down and negotiating and figuring things out, because they're always looking to ask some guys. And, you know, you still have a Clowney who's out there, don't Everson Griffin, see if he gets there. They're still holding out hope to grab one of those guys. So they're going to try to get whoever comes in here next on a bargain. And I think that's their reputation. I think that's expected. I'm pretty sure when they threw that number out, Devonta Freeman's agents, like, look, be ready for a counter, because that's just how they do business. It is what it is. Everyone does business differently, but it seems to have worked for these guys so far. Still waiting on Clowney, of course, but yeah, that's just how the Hawks get down, man.
Bump, there's been a lot of conversation about Russell Wilson over the last, you know, week, 2 weeks, in regards to rumors swirling, this and that, and regarding the Browns situation in 2018. You know, them considering a trade for Russell Wilson. What has been your feeling on all of this? Have you felt like it has been legitimate? Do you feel like, you know, they were right in doing so? Where have you kind of stood as you've kind of sat back and listened to the conversation?
Yeah, it's been fun listening to it, you know. And there's two ways I feel like you can look at it. Okay, say it's true. and the Hawks were talking to Cleveland about dealing Russell Wilson. I would say Cleveland was talking to the Hawks about Russell Wilson. I don't think the Seahawks were ready or even thinking about getting rid of Russell Wilson, but you hear Schneider talk, they're going to listen to any offer that's out there. So maybe they took a phone call or something and entertained it, you know, but they weren't really going to do anything. And then you can sit back and just laugh at it and say, you know what? We in this sports world media have absolutely nothing to talk about. And if anyone says anything at this point, we're going to jump on it. We're going to speculate. We're going to have fun with it. You know what I mean? Chris Sims making a living right now. You know, he's just throwing stuff out there and everyone's going to buy because there's nothing else to talk about. I don't think the Hawks were going to deal him. If there were any type of communication, Cleveland was just shooting their shot like organizations are going to do and say, hey, what if? But at no point do I think that Russell Wilson was going to be dealt to anybody, let alone the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, Bump, we're going to get into this conversation a bit more at 1:15, but Pro Football Focus had a release of the kind of top, well, the 32 wide receiver groups, and then the Seahawks were not in the top 10. What do you think they'd need to add to be in the top 10?
To be in the top 10? Honestly, I'm surprised they're not in the top 10. I can only think of a few receiving corps off the top of my head that I would take. Who are they missing? That's hard to say. You have your utility receiver in Tyler Lockett. You have your big guy in DK Metcalf. Maybe that third receiver spot. Philip Dorsett might be a sneaky pickup, I believe. I think he has all the skills to be a really good receiver. So I don't know. Maybe they're missing another big guy. Maybe they think the receiving core is too small with Lockett and Dorsett being the ones in the three and only having DK Metcalf. Because then after that is David Moore, who's about 6 foot. You got John Ursua, who's under 6 foot. Now, Freddie Swain, I believe, is around 6 foot. So maybe they're missing just another huge target. But I look at this receiving core, and I see every type of receiver. I see the big red zone threat, the big guy on the outside going down the field in DK Metcalf. I see the guy whose utility can go across the middle, do what you want, and lock it. And then I see a Philip Dorsett who's also going to stretch the field out. So maybe they're just missing depth, and maybe they're just missing a big third receiver, a big name in that third receiver spot. So people feel, I guess, some type of security in it, though. But I really like the receiving core.
Hypothetically, would you want to see Josh Gordon back here if he is reinstated?
Man, I'd love it. I would love it. I mean, we got just a sample of Josh Gordon. You know, right when we thought he was going to break out with that fingertip catch, you know, he obviously he got into some trouble. But if they were to bring a Josh Gordon, if they don't put him in the top 10, if they were to bring in a Josh Gordon, then this whole list needs to be reevaluated. I mean, there's your third name. There's a big name right there for you, you know. So I think it's familiarity, man. That's why, you know, Russell Wilson was frowned upon for so many years because people weren't familiar with them. So, you know, that's part of the Northwest, man. You're tucked away in Seattle. You got to earn your respect.
Okay, let's go one step further into the insanity here. We at the end of our show yesterday, we were talking about both Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. If he's available, and I'm not saying both guys, but let's say his psychological profile comes back clean. Would you want to take a shot on him?
I wouldn't do it, man. I mean, psychological profile. Like, are we getting tests done in a lab somewhere? Like, I wouldn't touch AB, man. Just because, one, he's getting older. Two, would he be able to come here and be a third receiver, be a second option? Because they're not just going to be like, hey, AB's in town. We're going to hand the keys over, and he's going to be the number one receiver. That's not how the Seahawks work. You gotta earn your reps out here. And would he be okay with that? I don't think he would be. He's one of the greatest receivers to ever play the game. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's had so many years with over 100 catches. Like, I don't think he's going to be okay coming out here and playing the background. So I wouldn't touch him. Talent-wise, the dude can play. And I think he has maybe four more years left in him. I know he takes care of his body. He works hard. But this is Russell Wilson's team now. And they bring guys in who kind of fit the personality of what they have going. And I think AB will kind of shake things up a little bit. And I don't think Pete Carroll's style of coaching would be good for AB. AB needs a guy who's a Belichick guy. There's strict rules. This is a business. You wear your suit and tie. You come, you know, that. And that's just not what the Seahawks are. So I could see a personality like Antonio Brown kind of taking advantage of the looseness. And it's just hard to trust a guy who puts his business out there all the time. You don't want guys to put your business out there. Just keep it low key and come to work and let's go.
What about the idea of the sky? What about the idea of the sky judge bump? You know, we see every year there's some critical call that's made or non-call that's not made, and we say, man, if only we had that eye up in the booth that could have corrected the on-field officials. Can you think of a reason to not have the sky judge there in the booth?
The only thing that would deter me from the sky judge is that are they going to use it and are they going to be honest? I mean, we saw with the pass interference deal, right? I can think of so many cases where that was a pass interference. Hollister, that was a pass interference. Rudolph in the end zone with the Saints, that was a pass interference. But it seems like the referees, their hands are tied. Like they're scared to influence the game. And maybe that's because of a handbook they were given or a conversation they have with their superiors. Like, look, try not to affect the game. So I love the idea of the sky judge, but it's just, are they going to use it? And over the years, we've seen that these guys just don't do it. I mean, there's blatant calls. We see it. Everybody, I mean, my son who's 8 years old can call out a pass interference, and these guys will get it wrong or be afraid to get it wrong. So therefore, they don't do anything. So I love the idea, but they got to use it, though.
Michael, we were having a conversation earlier this week about guys that the Seahawks have signed that haven't been talked about as much, or maybe their guys were not speaking about it a bunch in terms of guys that could be potential impact players. You know, Jacob Hollister being an example of last year, a guy that, you know, was mentioned, but no one really knew what he could do and how important he would have been to the team in the 2019 season. What is a name or two that stands out to you that a guy that's not really being talked about a bunch right now? It doesn't have, it could be a free agent signing or a draft pick that you think is going to be when the 2020 season ends, man, that guy contributed, exceeded expectations.
Man, Jake, I like that question. I got to go with Freddie Swain. I mean, he was drafted late, but you put on the film, when the ball is in his hands, he can go. And I feel like it's time for Tyler Lockett to move out of the special teams position, right? He's reached a point in his career where he's getting older. He's in his prime. He is an asset. You want to protect him. And I think that's how Freddie Swain is going to get on the field. When he starts running that ball in his hands, he has great speed. He has great vision. And I don't hear too many people talking about him, and rightfully so, because you have these 3 to 4 big names in front of him. But he's special, and I think that was a steal. I think he'll make this team, and I think he'll be huge in the return game, which affects field position, which will set this offense up even more.
Bump, have a great Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for coming on with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bump.
Right, Michael Bumpus joins us every Friday on the program. Right now, we're in four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Jake, who do you believe the Seahawks will eventually sign at running back? Freeman or Hyde?
Well, I think that the Seahawks' first option was Devonta Freeman, and I think that that was the case because he brings something unique to the table. And if he was healthy, I think that he's a guy that could be an all three down type of player, meaning that he could, you know, theoretically run the football on first, second down, but his ability to be a threat in the passing game is what really stood out and be a really nice third down back. But I think Freeman is going to have a tough time coming off of these, you know, his last contract, and really settling on a $3-4 million deal with the Seahawks, and so therefore, I don't think the Seahawks are going to play along too much longer in negotiations. So therefore, I think that they end up going with Carlos Hyde when it's all said and done, because I think he'll be less expensive. Crazy enough for a guy who just ran for over 1,000 yards, but I think he'll be less expensive, and I think they could get that deal done quicker than dragging it out with Devonta Freeman.
Second down. Poor Stacy. She's been wanting to rap on this topic all day long.
We really couldn't stop talking about it. All right.
Do the Seahawks really have the worst wide receiver core in the NFC West? Is that really possible?
I don't think so. But I will give Pro Football Focus credit for kind of bundling all the NFC West teams together, because I really don't think there's that much of a gap between them. It's not like they had Arizona 1, Seattle 26. So here's where they ranked, just so you guys know. So in the NFC West, it was Arizona, then LA, then San Francisco, then Seattle. In all of the NFL, Arizona was 12th. And then from 15th to 17th was the Rams, 49ers, and Seahawks, kind of right there together. So here's my knock on this. The Seattle Seahawks have Tyler Lockett, who had over 1,000 yards, DK Metcalf, who had 900 yards, and I would expect an even bigger year from this year. They combined for more receiving touchdowns, twice as many receiving touchdowns as did Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk in Arizona, despite the fact that Arizona is ranked as the top wide receiver group in the NFC West. Now, obviously that received a boost with the Cardinals' acquisition of DeAndre Hopkins, and Pro Football Focus notes that Hopkins and Fitzgerald have among the lowest drop rates in the NFL. But here's my problem when we sometimes do these kind of like off-season rankings, is that a lot of things are hypothetical. How much did we discuss the whole quarterback wide receiver combo that came out a while ago? Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett were out of the top like 12, but you had Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins in there, and you had other guys that were, you know, Tom Brady and Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, guys that hadn't played together before. I don't doubt that Tom Brady can establish a relationship pretty quickly, but chemistry takes time, and Russell Wilson has that with Tyler Lockett, and he built on that last year with DK Metcalf. I think they absolutely deserve more recognition than they were getting, especially considering that of all these quarterbacks, Russell Wilson threw more touchdowns than any of them. So yeah, I think I would have liked to see them a bit higher. Also, San Francisco's top receiver was a tight end. I know that it counts. I know that it counts, but I'm just saying.
Third down. Jake, how much cap space flexibility do the Seahawks realistically have left here?
Yeah, this really was inspired from an article that I saw from Jim Moore here on 710sports.com. Check it out. And Jim Moore is talking about some of the players that are still left that the Seahawks could cut to free cap space up. And he gave six names: KJ Wright, $6.5 million, what they would save. Brandon Jackson, Joey Hunt, David Moore would save them $2.1 million each. And the last two, Jacob Hollister, would be $3.25 million, and Bradley McDougal, you'd save $4 million. So I don't think, here's the thing, realistically, I do not think that Bradley McDougal is going to get cut. I really think that his spot on this roster is secure right now, and I really believe that Joey Hunt, his spot is secure as well, unless Ethan Posick was to come forward and really surprise people in training camp. I think they feel very comfortable having Joey Hunt as the backup. And so realistically, I think if you cut Brandon Jackson, David Moore, Jacob Hollister, and KJ Wright, you're looking at up near $14 million in cap savings, somewhere around there. So that's a lot of flexibility that you still have in your back pocket if you're the Seahawks. I would love for them to keep Jacob Hollister, but at the end of the day, if there's somebody else out there that you feel can improve your roster in a dramatic way, a defensive end, a Antonio Brown that we've thrown around, guys like that that could be game-changing type of additions, yeah, you've got around $14 million plus additional cap space that you could create by making a few cuts here or there.
Fourth down. What was your biggest takeaway from your time coaching up Russell Wilson?
Yeah, going to be heading home back to Seattle here starting next week. And really my biggest takeaway since I've been down here is a couple things. Is one, I think Russell Wilson, through this whole coronavirus situation, just as a player, there's not as many distractions that are there. And so you are constantly dialed in, working every single day. And I think that Russell is in tremendous shape right now. as he's, you know, preparing for the season. Secondly, I think that he's more driven than ever to be great and to be a guy who's going to take this team to the Super Bowl. I think that that is something he's always been very hyper-focused on, is winning. That's what he's built his brand off of. But I think the urgency in which you feel it from him is at an all-time high, which I love. And, you know, thirdly, the guy's still working on his craft. You know, he's still working on his game and is obsessed with improving. And I think you've seen that transition in his game since 2018. And he's continuing to keep growing and keep getting better. So very excited for what he is going to be able to do here in this crazy offseason. Just Russell Wilson has continued to work and keep getting better and helped his teammates get better along the way, holding, you know, virtual meetings outside of what they're already doing with the coaches. So he's doing everything in his power to help this team get better.
You know, I don't ever doubt that Russell Wilson is always trying to improve himself. But, you know, we saw that Tom Brady's out there with some of his new teammates working out the other day. That could be just because he needs to develop chemistry and gain some familiarity with his guys. But do either one of you think that there's a quarterback from any NFL team right now that's just saying, hey, I'm good. Like, I don't need to be out there, you know, working out or doing anything extra right now? Or are they all out there doing something to help keep themselves fresh? What do you think, Jake?
Well, they're all doing something. The difference is how comfortable are they, right? And I think it's really easy for guys like Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, you know, any franchise starting quarterback to feel very comfortable with where they're at. And some guys think that they're working, and they're really not working as hard as they could be. And I think that that's the difference in it all. Is, yeah, sure, I can say, hey, I got my lift in, I went and, you know, threw the ball around, this and that, and I should be good. There's a difference between really going above and beyond to try and make sure that you're as ready as possible, outworking the competition, so to speak, Tom.
Halftime show's coming up next. We're going to talk about the scuttlebutt involving Devontae Freeman and Carlos Hyde. The latest on both of them. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
All of a sudden, we got ourselves a running back situation. What the heck is going on? I thought we had that squared away, but evidently not. Remember, those injuries from last year to Rashad Penny and Chris Carson are still lingering. So we may be in the market for a Carlos Hyde, for Devontae Freeman. We'll see what shakes out there. But here's Pete Carroll talking about what Chris Carson's hip injury or how it might affect him going forward. Cut one.
Chris is doing really well. There's not a whole lot Chris can do, so he hasn't done very many things wrong. So it's an injury that just, it takes time. And it's not really, it's serious because it's a hip, but it's not serious in that we know what's going to happen. It's not displaced or any of that kind of stuff. We just need to wait it out, and which is really hard for Chris because he's a workout maniac and loves to be on, you know, in the weight room and all that. He's doing the best he can, and he's done everything he can possibly do, and we're just hoping he doesn't overdo it, so we're trying to monitor that. But we're counting on a full recovery. He should be ready to go.
Okay. Now, we talked to Vaughn McClure yesterday of ESPN.com, who covers the Falcons. If it ends up being Devontae Freeman, what can he do that's unique? Cut four.
He's a guy not only that can run the ball out of the backfield, but he's also a good target out of the backfield as far as a pass-catching running back. So, you know, it all depends on how healthy he is. I think if he's healthy at all, he can contribute to any team.
Stacey, which of those two guys do you think is a better fit here?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I would go with Freeman, not only because he's just a hair younger, but also he contributed more in the passing game last year. I think I'd like to see the Seahawks continue to diversify their offense. They started taking that step this year with Chris Carson. You saw him have significantly more receptions than he did in his first full season without injury. And I liked the direction that was going in for Seattle. I think it made him a more valuable tool for Russell Wilson. And I would like to see another running back that can be a pass catcher for Wilson. I think either way, though, it wouldn't hurt to bring in a veteran running back.
Jake?
No, it certainly wouldn't hurt to bring in a veteran running back. And the interesting part is, I don't know what Carlos Hyde's situation is in terms of what he can do receiving the football. I think he's very similar in the sense of Chris Carson that, you know, look, he can be used in the screen game. He's got good enough hands where he can be used in passing patterns. But there's a difference between being a true receiving threat and just being a running back that can catch a wide route or a flat route, a screen. Devontae Freeman could run a lot of routes in the route tree and attack the linebackers. So I think Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson are very, very similar in that aspect. But maybe DJ Dallas, if you bring on Carlos Hyde and not Devontae Freeman, maybe DJ Dallas becomes that third down back who has had some experience catching the football, being a receiver coming out of high school. So I think that role will get itself sorted out.
This is a weird question, but do you guys ever hear somebody's name and for whatever reason their name fits in perfectly as a substitution into song lyrics?
I can't think of someone. Why? Who were you thinking of? Freeman?
No, there's this old Steely Dan song called Dallas, and if you take DJ Dallas's name and insert it over those lyrics where they say the word Dallas, it works perfectly. Every time I hear his name, that song just like comes into my mind. You guys never get that? You never have that problem?
No, I can't. I can't say I think of Steely Dan lyrics often, Tom.
Well, not with them, but with anybody.
We get it. Never. You're obsessed with Steely Dan. You're a Steely fan.
Well, I am. I am a Steely fan. DJ Dallas, I can't stay.
No.
Should have been at
Stop
the Dallas.
It. All right, stop. Next. Stop it.
According to Ryan Divish, the Mariners are in their final preparations to reopen their spring training complex in Peoria for voluntary workouts for individuals or small groups. Guys, when you hear that, you take that as a good sign that maybe the union and Major League Baseball are making some progress on getting this thing settled and getting the baseball season underway. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, normally when I hear news like that, I do take it as good news because why would they be doing that, right? They're not opening it up just for fun, right? Like we know that, like, right. Hey, we've got it open and anybody can come if they want to, you know. Okay, nobody does? Okay, all right, that's cool. No, they're doing it for a reason. And I think that it is in preparation because everybody's feeling good. At least the owners are, and I don't know if that's the right call or not, but they feel good about the direction in which this is heading.
Yeah, I agree for the same reason. It's, you know, when you see a move like this, you have to think, well, there are corresponding moves. They didn't just open the doors to the facility for players to come in and train. You also have to pay training staff. You have to pay the people that work there. And for teams looking to avoid furloughs at all costs, knowing that you're going to continue paying people at that facility, I take it as you maybe are growing more confident that this is something you can that's sustainable, that you can keep permanently because you're going to want to train, and then you're growing with your confidence that the season will start. So I see it and the corresponding moves that it implies as positive things.
Next. I'm going to spring something on you guys here that we hadn't planned on talking about, but it's something that we just sort of missed the other day. SportsCenter tweeted out the all-time starting fives for the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Seattle Supersonics. So for the Sonics, we have Gary Payton, Gus Williams, Detlef Schrempf, Sean Kemp, and Jack Sigma. I don't think anybody has a problem with that list. For the Thunder, though, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Paul George, and Serge Ibaka. I saw a lot of people on Twitter getting upset that SportsCenter gave Oklahoma City possession of Kevin Durant because Durant was drafted here and actually played here. And I guess you could make a similar case with Russell Westbrook. Is it fair for the Thunder to claim Durant? I actually think that it is. I mean, that's where he made his name. I know that he played here and would have kept on playing here had the Sonics not left. But, you know, I mean, he made his star in Oklahoma City. Same with all these guys. I mean, Westbrook, if you want to claim him, too. I'm not sure that you can put those two guys with Seattle. What do you think, Stacey?
I think it's totally fair to leave Durant with OKC. I assumed that the issue more people were taking was that SportsCenter tweeted that and then said winner gets to keep the team or something like that. Come on, man. Yeah. Like, this is a city that still is reeling from having their team stripped away. Like, it's not really a funny joke to a lot of people. And trust me, I try to take a dose of my own medicine. I tell a lot of jokes. I understand that if you try to be humorous and do whatever, then you have to be able to take jokes too. I get it. Everyone struggles with it sometimes, but that seems like just a toe over the line. Like, it's not really funny because there are people that grew up loving these teams that don't have it anymore. I don't know. It's like a black mark on the NBA, and I don't know that you should make a joke about it.
100% agree with that. Absolutely. The only name, I mean, Gus Williams to me, I don't have any argument with that. But from a sentimental value, you know, standpoint, downtown, Freddie Brown being one of the guards. I mean, he was a captain of the 1979 championship team. So hard to leave him off of there. Great 3-point shooter, fantastic name. But I think they got it right. I think they got that list right for sure.
Yeah, I think it's really hard when you're coming up with an all-time starting five because you only have five positions to do it. Like, if you're a team that has a long history of success with great players, and the Sonics did, it's tough to cram all those. Like, you're going to end up shorting somebody. There just aren't enough spots to go around. That's just kind of how it is.
You know what you shouldn't do is say, you could get your team back, maybe. Just kidding. It's just a joke we're making. That's ill-advised tweet.
Sports. Well, you know what, though? Again, you can't blame anybody for what they're tweeting right now because it's COVID and we have stuff.
No, I did it.
You're going to blame them anyway.
I did.
All right. We have a slight update on Quentin Dunbar. I think it's probably good news. Plus, one person who thinks playing in front of no fans is a great idea. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome back in. Tom, Jake, and Stacey. It's The Timeline, reading you the top trending stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Go ahead and tag us if you want us to include a few that you're seeing on Twitter, at Stacey Rost, at JTHeaps9, at Tom Wassel. Let's go ahead and get Wassel. I said Tom Wassel. Let's go ahead and get started with a story from the Seahawks. DK Metcalf was talking to, was it Kay Adams? I think it was Kay Adams yesterday. And he talked about his first time meeting Marshawn Lynch, which included an impression of Lynch. Here it is, Curtis and Cut number 6.
I remember the first day of practice. I was walking out and he was like, he told our running back coach, "Hey man, they gonna have to hit me. I ain't been hit in a year, bro." I just bust out laughing because like it's week 16 and you gotta take a hit Sunday, but I don't know where you're gonna get it from. Like, so they had to hit him at practice so he could get ready. But it was just funny how he said it to Chad. He was like, "Hey man, I ain't been hitting the yet. They gonna have to hit me."
Practice. Was the defense like, "Okay, sure"?
Yeah, so they touched him up a little bit.
Imagine being a rookie around Marshawn Lynch for the first time, and you're just like taking in all the things he says, and you can't stop laughing.
Is he just walking comedy? I mean, I know that he's a bit of an acquired taste. Not everybody gets him, but he is one of those rare people that like every mannerism, everything that comes out of his mouth is just kind of funny.
Every player I've ever talked to likes him a lot.
Yeah, for the unsuspecting person, like a rookie,
yes,
like DK Metcalf, it's like you put somebody with him for the first time. It's like, is this guy for real? Like, what's going on here?
Yes, 100%. I actually got a chance to I didn't play with Marshawn, but I got to meet him right after he had retired, and this was before he had, you know, gone on to the Raiders. We were coming down to play them, to play the Oakland Raiders, actually, for our fourth preseason game, and Marshawn was at the hotel. And I'm walking with Russell and the quarterbacks and Daryl Bevel. We're walking into our offensive meeting, and Marshawn comes down the hall out of nowhere, and he starts. He didn't even say hi to Bevel. He starts cussing him out because the Seahawks had just cut Cooper Helfick, who is from the Bay Area. He's like, got no love for my boy Coop. Yeah, he's like, got no love for my boy Coop. What's up with that? Like, you know, and just, you know, talking in very much the same way as DK was. And I was just like, whoa, this guy is an absolute whirlwind. You know, it was so funny to listen to him, you know, talk, conversate. It just his approach to everybody. It's just so bold and so different than how everybody is talking to each other and approaching one another, especially your coach, right? And at that point, Marshawn just didn't care. And from all the stories that I heard, he didn't care who he was talking to.
No.
You know, he treated everybody the same. And, you know, that genuine nature is just somebody that you can really gravitate towards when it's not only just, you know, it's funny in his approach and who he is, and he is a funny guy, but also knowing that he is the guy that would, you know, help you out in any situation if you really needed it.
Yeah, in 4 years in this locker room, I never have met a single player that didn't have great things to say about him ever. Okay, let's transition right here to not a funny story, but just kind of a developing one. So going back to Quentin Dunbar, we've been talking about that case forever. So his lawyer, Michael Grieco, has already spoken with John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you missed that interview, go to 710sports.com. But he tweeted out another update. So this one is at @Mike_Grieco. Grieco is spelled G-R-I-E-C-O, if you want to go look at it. He has a screenshot of a DM that I believe Quentin Dunbar received. This is what Grieco says. If, according to the accusers, our client Quentin Dunbar lost a bunch of money earlier in the week at some gambling party, parentheses, suggesting he had motive, why did the organizer text Dunbar about not knowing about the prior party and what went down? Answer, because he wasn't there. So in the screenshot of the text, it says a guy texting a picture from the party saying, you missed some good money yesterday, bro, Dolphins players. And then he just says basically what happened at the party.
He's saying that this guy, like, you missed good money, meaning like you weren't there, and that proves that Dunbar was not at this party. Okay.
Well, no. It proves it. He's saying that in the police report implies that the motive for Dunbar and Baker was because they had lost $70,000 to this group of people 2 days prior. And he's saying, well, Dunbar didn't have motive because this screenshot shows that this person's talking to him like he wasn't at the party.
Yeah.
So he's saying if Dunbar wasn't at that party 2 days prior, why would he have motive to, like, rob these people?
I mean, look. If he lost any money at a gambling party or if he was present at a gambling party. I mean, that doesn't prove that he wasn't part of a robbery 2 days later. You don't need to lose money gambling in order to commit a robbery. To me, it still comes down to the witnesses saying whether or not he was part of it. See what I'm saying? Like, who cares if he lost money gambling a few days before that? Like, yeah, that would give him a motive, but he doesn't need – no, you don't need a motive to go out and commit robbery.
Well, you don't, but I think that was part of the premise of the story and also the part of him and DeAndre Baker's relationship, you know, that they were really close and tight. And Tom, to your point there, is maybe they were, and maybe Dunbar was upset – that his friend, you know, got took like that and was a part of it. But ultimately, it does come down to those eyewitness statements. And look, this is, to me, this is jockeying by an attorney, and right. I really want to see it come down into court. That's really what all that matters here is what happens when they get to court. Are charges dropped, and what do those witnesses say? Do they stick to what they initially said in their police report, or do they come back and stick to what they're saying now? That's going to be the real, you know, key to this whole thing.
Well, I think outside of motive, it's another way for his lawyer, and who knows what's true here, but it's another way for his lawyer to call into question the reliability of these witness statements, because one of the victims in the police report who had property stolen from him said that he met Baker and Dunbar at a separate party at that party 2 days prior. So I think you're saying, like, well, you said Dunbar was there at that party, and then he robbed you at this separate party. But then in this separate text, it looks like one of you was telling Dunbar about what happened. So clearly he wasn't there. So it's just kind of calling into question really all of these statements.
It's too bad that he was in Florida, where everybody's wandering around freely right now, right? The rest of the country is in quarantine because of COVID. Had he been in any other state, he probably wouldn't have been out hanging out with anybody. You know what I mean? This was a bad week, by the way, for NFL players. It was a bad 2 weeks. I mean, Ed Oliver got in trouble. There was a couple other NFL players who got in trouble. There was one just yesterday. Come on, guys. This is the period of time where GMs and coaches hope that players stay out of trouble. It's just not really happening right now. I want to play that Nick Rolovich sound a little bit later, maybe when we get to NFL headlines. I know it's not NFL, but he talks about playing in front of no fans and how that could be fun. Be curious to hear that. But remember, high school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons or even careers cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic, and 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So, if you know of a local team or athlete impacted by the crisis, use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they are your hometown hero. Again, the hashtag is 710 Hometown Heroes. We speak with the professor next. Get the latest on Freeman and Hyde, 710 ESPN Seattle.